I mean, maybe I just didn't know how to do it.
That song with Kanye, Jay-Z, Lil Wayne, and Rihanna.
A song by
itself,
yeah. On Apple.
Lil Wayne was on that track.
Yes, he was.
No, he was.
Yes, he is. Lil Wayne's not on that track?
Originally, no.
Oh, well, then.
I didn't know
that. It had to be like a later version.
What Lil Wayne did on No Ceilings with that shit?
Yeah, yeah, no. But no, he wasn't. Originally, it was just Jay-Z, Rihanna, and Kanye.
Well, I count Lil Wayne being on that track. In my head, Lil Wayne's on that track forever.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, Gamero, the Pharaoh, the motherfucking poor man's Robert De Niro. You know what I'm saying? Bald version, but still beautiful. It is so very ecstatic to be here. You know what I'm saying? Another beautiful Thursday at midnight here at the beautiful hallowed midnight in Miami halls. You know what I'm saying? Before we get to introducing the powerhouse of guests that we have today, ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Go on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. You know what I'm saying? Go on, you're on Spotify, you're on Apple Podcasts, on Deezer, you're on all that good stuff. But more than anything, you're on YouTube. That's why we got 72 damn cameras in here so you can see everybody's beautiful faces. You know what I'm saying? And ladies and gentlemen, if you know me, you know I am merely but another thespian, an actor. I find the stage as my home. You know what I'm saying? And this here is my home as well. So I can, you know what I'm saying, stumble as many times as I want. You know what I'm saying? Amen. And that's home field advantage. You know what I'm saying? Right there. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Like that, gang. Baby. You know what I'm saying? Ladies and gentlemen, today is no ordinary day. You know what I'm saying? And in my quest to find good theater, I found phenomenal theater. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor. You know, I am ecstatic every single time that we get to have a cast and crew in here, Midnight in Miami, and today is no exception. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my absolute honor to be able to introduce, for the very first time ever, in the Midnight in Miami halls, we have the cast and crew of Top Dog Underdog! Oh my God! Thank you so much for joining me, everybody. How is everybody? Oh my God, my people. How is everybody? Everything good? Everything good? How is everybody?
Yes, everything's awesome. Yes, thank good, you so man. Much. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, man. First of all, I'm so ecstatic, and also I've used 17 times this word, ecstatic, to have the opportunity to have seen this production before we shot today, because that is definitely another advantage today. So thank you guys for having me. Thank you for joining us. I guess let's get started with the roots of it all. Before we even continue, please introduce yourselves and the role that you play in this production from left to right.
Well, I guess that's me. my name is Denzel McCausland. I play Lincoln in the show.
Hi, my name is Roderick Randall, and I'm playing Booth.
Why you always say hi?
Sounds like a damn AA meeting out here, boy.
What's good?
That sounds like an AA meeting.
What they do?
Man, just okay. Say what it is, bro. What it is, what it do, man.
There you go.
You say hi.
Carrie Brianna Hart, I'm the director.
Teresa Adelina, I'm the stage manager.
All right, all right, all right. You know what I'm saying? Titans of industries over here. You know what I'm saying? So where did this all come about? Where, you know, when did you first hear that this production might be underway at Main Street? Did you spearhead that idea? Or talk to me about the roots of it all.
Main Street Players actually had this play on their calendar to produce in 2019 in the fall.
Oh, wow.
And they held on to the rights to it because the pandemic hit. They weren't able to mount the show. And it just they just held on to it, and then
like an ex that won't let you go.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly. They had the foresight because it's the 20th anniversary of the play winning the Pulitzer Prize, and had the foresight to hold on to the script and hold on to the rights. And then they approached me about directing it, and of course I was ecstatic about that. That was earlier this year.
That's a good vocabulary word.
Damn, I'm rubbing off on everybody. Okay. Yes, I have. I have. If there's a company out there with ecstatic in your name somewhere, hit me up. You know what I'm saying? Get this sponsorship going. Had you read this play before it was offered? Or
yes. Yes, I was familiar with the play. I'd seen two productions of it here in South Florida, and I was very, very excited to direct it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And actually, touching up on that, was it added pressure, the fact that you had seen it down here before? Did you use that as inspiration? Did you try to not use that as inspiration too much to just kind of have your own creative, you know, vision? Talk to me about that.
Well, there is a lot of pressure because it is a well-known script, because it is a Pulitzer Prize-winning play, because the productions that have been done before were so well-received and wonderfully done with fantastic actors. I also had the pressure of finding the perfect actors to perform these roles, and also to make sure that creatively we were going to be able to produce the proper integrity of this production and do it the way it's supposed to be done in 2022. It won the award in 2002, and here we are revisiting the play. And so many times when I have seen the play, yes, it's a play with a lot of dialogue. It's very, very, it's an underbelly of culture that we get to see in this play. There's a particular type of vernacular that's used, a lot of language that's used. But there are certain things that have been written into the script that I wanted to honor that I had not seen honored in previous productions, which is the space and the thoughtfulness that Susan Laurie Parks wrote into the script. Right. After certain things were said, there are specific lines that say, we're going to pause here, and you're going to react silently here, and you're going to respond silently here, and you're going to react again silently here, and then I've got another response right here that is silent until somebody finally breaks the silence, which is what happens in real life, in real relationships. And here we have this relationships with these brothers.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of space in there, and I recall not having seen that space in previous productions. And so I really wanted to honor that. And I think that we have done it. And I think that it makes the impact of the play even more poignant.
Right.
You know, when the audience comes to see it, because you know it's coming, it's inevitable, but you don't know when it's coming. And it does come. It's inevitable,
right,
you know,
right.
But the space in which it happens, you think it's not going to happen here, but it does happen here.
Yes.
You know, without saying too
yes.
much, you know.
It does. And you had mentioned the casting process.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult as it may have been, you executed it flawlessly.
Thank you.
And that is an understatement. Talk to me about that process. Was it a big turnout? Was it not? Was it a difficult decision? Did it, you know, come down to the wire? Talk to me about not only the cast, but the crew as well.
So the casting of the play was a process. You know, we have a whole day where people come in. I see a bunch of people, a bunch of men for this production. They do monologues. I ask them to adjust. I ask them to read a cold read from the script. And then I have to decide who I'm going to call back and who I will not call back. So from that first day, I made a list and then called back individuals. Denzel was the first one that evening. He wanted to come in at 6 o'clock. Audition started at 7.
Okay.
Nah, it was really just because.
Like, we're running on my time. We're running on my time.
I was really getting off work, and I was like, "Hey, I'll just go home after if nobody else took it." So, hey,
he's like, "I want to be there at 6 o'clock." I'm just like, "Well, I'm sorry, you can be there, but we won't be there. We start at 7 o'clock." And then Rod was not even on the list to audition. He just showed up to audition. He wasn't even on the list.
Yeah, he's doing. And I was towards the end.
And towards
damn.
The alpha a and walking. The omega.
Damn,
let's go.
Oh, boy. Yeah. A walking. Nobody saw. I'm going to edit that out.
But with this play, with seeing all the gentlemen come in, I did have an idea of what I wanted for the casting. However, there were people that I saw that really challenged my idea and my concept of what I had in mind. And I had to think about all the different scenarios of how this could go.
Say it.
There was one individual who was absolutely wonderful.
Oh, I thought that was going to go a completely different way. I was like, he was horrible.
No, I didn't say anybody that was horrible. And laying down the dialogue of the play told me that it was their favorite play. And I was like, yeah, I believe this is your favorite play. But as a director, person had really, really long hair. And I did not see long, long hair for either of these brothers. And so it threw a wrench to me because I had to sit and think the whole weekend, is this decision, is that decision, what decision do I make, how do I pair this? And then I went with what my gut was telling me. And then we got these two gentlemen here.
Wow.
Which I had a strong feeling, but then, you know, and there was another gentleman who came in, and I wanted him to be one of the characters. But this play is so fiery, it's so fiery, and I needed to see that fire. I didn't see the fire. And so if I couldn't see the fire in the audition, how do I know that I'm going to be able to get the fire out of you in the rehearsal process? I could sit there in the rehearsal process pulling and pulling and pulling and pushing and prodding and poking and everything to get it, but if it's not there, it's not going to be there. I needed to see it in the audition. I didn't see it. So
and they bring the fire, you know, and what I'm saying, it's like, and, damn, Avatar over here is like fire. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
you
know.
Fire style.
Fire style.
So what I got is fire. I got dynamite. I got all that explosive stuff. All that nuclear. Zuko of the
office.
It's like nuclear.
Yeah. Let's get adjectives in here, you know? Wow. What a remarkable process. Talk to me about how it was from your point of view, the audition process.
Okay.
Don't jump all at once now.
For me, it was one of my homies, one of my closest friends, Warren Welch, told me about it. And so I didn't know anything about it. I was just like, sure, I'll go out. And I was just trying to schedule a time. As she said, I put 6. And then she said 7. I was like, sure, I'll take it. Right. And then from there, I suck at auditions. So I was like, hey, I'm just going to go out there, do my best. Hope for the best and see.
Bro, and that's my next tattoo, honestly, bro. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah, once we did it, I can't remember who I read with first, but I think it was, I remember at one point at the end, she just put me with Rod, and it was like, okay, sure. I remember Rod had just did a first read with someone, and he was like, hey, I'm Rod. I'm like, hey, I'm Denzel. And it was like, alright, we just gonna try to make something happen. And we barely talked. We barely got time to go through the scene because we were trying to go through it outside. And someone else was in there at the moment, and we were trying to get through it. And then literally, they finished already. So it was like, oh, okay.
And then we get in there.
Yeah, and it's not even the part we got to.
Right.
It was literally the second part. We didn't even get to that. It was like, oh, well, screw it. We just gotta make something.
Like, yeah, for real. Just like we just gotta scrap.
Yeah, so it was like, all right, we're just going to try our best. Hopefully she doesn't hate it. And then after that, we just went through, and I think she said she saw what she needed to see, and then we were done. And I was like, all right, I hope I didn't mess that up. So I don't want to cuss on this. I don't know if we can.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was like, I don't want to fuck this up. But yeah, that was how that went.
Damn. All right. All right. And was it intimidating that sometimes when you're auditioning there, maybe you could hear the person inside auditioning as well?
So when I audition, I like to try to be as loud as possible. Yeah, man. Just like, you know, to put my stamp on. It's like, all right, I'm here. My name is Rod. I'm getting ready to do this audition. Yes, to be or not to be, you know? So, you know. Oh, yeah.
Jeez, okay,
and
then
you walk out and everybody's just like, damn, man, fuck.
Talk to me about finding the right crew.
So, it's very, very hard to find stage managers right now. A lot of stage managers are booked.
I believe it.
Which is, hallelujah, a great thing.
Of course.
But it's
hashtag booked and blessed.
Booked and blessed.
I've never heard
it's difficult to find technical crew right now. Yeah. People need to realize that this is a career option that you can go into.
Right.
Stage management. You know, we're very, stage managers are very happy, you know, with what they do. And we're happy with the work that they do. We need them. And so Danny put out a call for stage managers and he interviewed a couple of people and then he told me about Therese. And I had worked with Therese actually several years ago, back in 2015 or something like that. Like
long
so
time
long
ago.
Yeah. So long. We don't want to age either of us.
Yeah,
but
no.
Several years ago, we did.
They're ancient.
And so he sent me her resume and I said, yeah, I know Therese. I would love to work with Therese again. She's got great energy. And she came into the rehearsal process and was completely prepared. Told me this is the first time that she's ever stage managed a production, which I would not ever believe because
she's been holding us down.
Her process is impeccable. And
she's been all right.
Therese has been excellent. She's been excellent throughout this entire production as far as getting us on point, keeping us on schedule, reminding us of what we need to do. Her communication skills are excellent. I highly recommend her as a stage manager.
Okay, okay.
Because there was nothing that I had to ask that was not already right there.
Right.
And that is the job of a superb stage manager.
Oh, yeah.
And she just definitely...
There we go. There we go. Flex on them. Flex on them. Flex on them.
I was very, very blessed.
There we go. There we go.
Because it's not always that way. It's not always that way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Therese, how far along was the production when you first joined it?
I was there from the first day of rehearsal.
Okay.
A1 since day one, baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Ride or die.
How was that?
Sandbox, baby.
There we go. How was that first table read for you? Did you know this production before you did this one or no?
Yes, I read it in college. This is one of my favorite plays, so I was really excited. Part of the reason why I wanted to be a part of it in the first place was, well, like, I got a little taste of stage management by, like, running sound, music directing, like, being behind the board over the summer at Miami Theater Center.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm all for, like, you know.
Shout out MTC, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, there you go, MTC.
There we go.
Love you. And so I love just, like, learning about the entertainment business, anything I can get my hands dirty on, you know?
Okay.
And so, and I have a long history with Main Street Players. So I actually did their summer camp when I was like a wee little tot.
Okay, okay, awesome. Wow.
Yeah,
I love how
little Therese
that full circle moment right there.
Yes, yes, yes. So Main Street's been my first in many ways. My first professional production acting, my first professional stage management opportunity. So I was really excited to be a part of it. And that table read, I was fucking nervous.
Yeah?
I was very nervous.
You don't have lines.
I know, but
she had to read all the stage directions.
Oh, man. And that's more technical than anything.
Yeah.
Oh.
Me stuttering.
Oh, and I know that better than anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you are not the only one stuttering. Bro. Like, yo, stop. I was going through it. I was like, Jesus. Scene 4?
Help me.
Were you guys nervous for the table read? I've never asked you this.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I feel like I'm the worst reader ever when it comes to table reads because... All right, now I gotta like read this in front of people and like put emotion and inflection with these words. And it's like,
emotion.
You know, like, all right, we just cast this dude and this nigga can't read.
Bro, it was when it was a singing part. It was a singing part in scene 1. I'm like, I don't know what Carrie's looking for in this table read right now. Should I sing this right now? Should I like ask what she's looking for? And then once we got to scene 4, I was like, yo, this is just me. And I have not really fully gone through the scene because I didn't know the show. I knew of the show, but I've never read it before I got it. So I was like, I am about to go through this with my dyslexic. So when doing it, I was hella nervous. I was like, what are we doing right now? Could we not do this at the moment? Could we just like wait a couple weeks and read the play? Yeah, no, definitely nervous. Definitely.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'm saying? Every single week we have three segments. And the first one is actually called mail time. You know what I'm saying? I stole that shit from Blue's Clues.
That
copyright went out of date a long time ago. In this here beautiful segment, we ask our illustrious guests three questions that you yourself have submitted via DMs, via the IG, via whatever, letter, snail mail, braille, whatever it may be. That's the blind one. And here we go.
I'm still on illustrious. I'm sorry. Thank you, man.
I try. And everybody has to answer this individually, so don't be, hopping on other answers. And let's go from left to right again. How do you think this production would change were it not in such an intimate theater?
Oh, why do we have to go from left from right? I don't know how to answer this. I feel like if it wasn't in such an intimate space, it wouldn't feel as claustrophobic, especially in those last couple scenes. A lot of people have told me that those last couple scenes feel very claustrophobic and that it feels like it's so much tension. And I feel like in those moments, it wouldn't really be there. And you wouldn't feel like you were in the house. You weren't in the room with these two brothers who were going through it at that moment. Which being on stage is kind of hard to feel because you're just there. You're just trying to convey everything. But being told that everything feels so close and that it's like it's hard to breathe at times, even for an audience member. It helps us, at least for me, in terms of, okay, I'm doing the right thing where I'm conveying the right thing in this moment where it's like I'm giving the story what it needs. So I feel like if it was in a bigger space that it might lose that. Maybe for those people who are way off where they don't feel like they're in the room with you, where they don't feel like they're actually in the moment where it's like, oh, I'm just watching a show and I'm seeing everything else around me. They might lose that. Hopefully I answered the question correctly.
You definitely did. And also, there are no right or wrong answers also. So thank you.
Yeah, go after that, man.
Yeah, for real. If we were in a larger venue... Well, number one, it wouldn't be as cold because that's the first thing that I do when I walk up in the theater. It's like, all right, how's it feeling? Because I really don't have, a shirt on for a lot of the play. So
for all the ladies.
Yeah. There you go.
So it's like, man, I got to adjust this air temperature because this is a confined area. So right. Let me turn the heat up.
Yeah.
So I can feel comfortable in my own house because this is my house,
Yeah.
So I think that would change it.
I mean, I pay the rent.
Never agree on a temperature.
Excuse me?
I pay the rent.
Like a damn married couple.
Listen, you just make the money.
Hey.
I go down there to the leasing alphas, to leasing office, and I get in the money. So I'm paying it.
But I'm the one who brings the money. Man, that's what
yes, moving on.
Moving on. Beautiful answer.
So I think that if the play were not in such an intimate theater that you would not be able to see nor feel the energy coming off of these two gentlemen when they are going through this mechanism of top dog, underdog.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because it's so intimate and the violations and submissions and overpowerings that happen are so constant and definite that you need to be able to see it close. Mm-hmm. And the audience, I think, feels like they are in the apartment with them, which is what they should feel.
Yeah. I was front row and I was like, I thought it was a roller. It was, I came out sweating, you know what I'm saying? I was, it wasn't, you know? Yeah.
Very intense. I saw the sweat on you. Yeah. I saw the sweat on you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
oh.
so intense.
I just saw them good shoes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, appreciate you, man.
I saw the good jacket.
Oh, oh man. Everybody got the compliments today. Damn, okay.
It's so intense.
Wow.
You need to, I mean, there's a push for immersive theater, you know, where people are in the scene and they're touching things and, you know, up there interacting with the actors. But you also can have an immersive experience by being in an intimate theater because the audience is in the room. And like you said, sitting there in the front row, like Therese and I sat there for the whole rehearsal process.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And the last week, you know, because we go through the whole process and we slowly get to the rhythm of what the show is going to be. That last week, sitting in the front row, I mean, he just was like, I had to put on my seatbelt and strap myself in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because of the force of energy and what was coming at me, what I'm seeing you know, in front of me. You just have to rear back in your seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it would be very different. You know, they're doing it on Broadway. I believe the theater is an 800-seat theater.
Huge.
Yeah, it's 800, I think it's 800 seats. They open on October 20th, you know.
Okay.
Previews right now.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like a synergy that's happening between Broadway and Miami.
Yeah, there we go.
The 20th anniversary.
Love that.
But their production is going to be wonderful and fantastic. You know, we have a whole Broadway experience here as well with this production. And it's intimate.
Oh, wow.
And you can see, you can see the tension. You can feel. It's palatable. You hear them breathing. You can't do that in an 800-seat theater.
Right.
Unless maybe your microphones are great. You know you have amplification. But with amplification, you always can have the possibility of some glitch, some sound issue. But here, you hear every moment. You hear every breath. You hear every sigh. You hear every pause. You hear every hesitation of verbiage, you know, the start-stop of wanting to say something and not being able to say it because of the circumstances. You can feel that here.
You can definitely appreciate things a whole lot more. I made a point to message Kat. Big shout out Kat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yes, prior guests over here. And I made it a point to message her. I was like that gun looked amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So definitely. Yeah.
I mean, to bounce off of what everybody else said.
Right.
I mean, I agree that I think that the intimate space works. And I think, you know, like many people have told me that have come to see the show that they feel like a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
In their lives. And I think that that is a privilege to be that close to the actors. Because think about it, when you go to a concert, if you're in the nosebleeds and you don't have that Jumbotron, how are you really able to see the expressions that the performer is emoting? And
You don't gotta tell me. I went to Kanye West at freaking the MLB, the album listening party, bro. They didn't have the screens on. I was like, who is that? Is that? I couldn't tell who it was, man.
Right. It changes the experience.
100%.
And I think there's something really special about, like, the stage is not very large, and the two actors take up most of it, and you get to really be there with them and feel what they're feeling, and they're very tightly wound.
Oh,
with
everything
going on in both of their lives. So, I don't know. I think it's a luxury to like, breathe the same air, like, close to them and, like, experience the tension that way.
Yeah.
It's make-believe, but, you know. Yeah. In the moment that you're there, it feels very real.
Yeah.
You're in it.
It is real.
It is real.
It is real. Great answers all around. I remember even the person to my right-hand side, or maybe two seats down, when you were doing the cards, she would be... She would like reach in. She would, I was like, "Your head is on the stage, girl." Like, yeah, like, but you know, like, and you were that. She couldn't guess the cards, you know. So that's something we'll get into as well. But thank you for answering that question. Second question from our Mealtime segment: What has been the biggest hurdle during this entire process so far for you?
Just the mental, getting my mind right, wrapped around it. This show is very taxing. And if you're not prepared for that, I don't know how other actors would react to it, so I can't speak for them. But for me, it's like when you're not really mentally prepared for something like this and trying to make it make sense for you, it's definitely taxing to try and answer those questions that aren't really answered in the script. Like, there's a lot of things in terms of familial drama with our parents. And that's some stuff that you got to answer yourself. And it's like having to answer those things and getting yourself in a mindset before the show of where you're at. That was one of the things I was taught by Elizabeth Price. Shout out to you.
big shouts.
Love you.
One thing was to, where are you before the show starts? And there's a lot of stuff for these two men, especially them being in their 30s. There's a lot of stuff they haven't dealt with. There's a lot of things they have dealt with. And a lot of things they've dealt with very terribly. So trying to put yourself in a mindset of that and to be okay with it, especially through the course of the show, which is only a week, basically. So it's like to be in the course of a week and it's like a lot of stuff happens. So trying to do that, and especially because when we started the show, it was in segments. So when it was kind of late in the game when we started doing the whole thing at once. And when you start getting used to that, it's like, there's a lot of stuff you got to go through all at once, just one after another, after another, after another.
It's just draining.
Yeah, it gets to you. So I'm still trying to figure it out now, honestly. I told Rod that today where it was like, I'm still trying to figure out what am I doing after this show, especially after doing it three times in a row in a weekend. It's like, how do you even try to go back to your life when you have so much happen in such a short amount of time?
And I agree. Just like trying to break out of that character, out of that life, you know, that we've just spent this whole play going through, this whole play experiencing. And like for me, you know, I'm totally, you know, immersed in it. I'm committed. And just to like let it go, it's a tall task. Because sometimes after rehearsal, after the shows, I'll go home and I'm just weighed down by so much guilt and depression and just like, I just killed my brother. You know, I just off.
Spoiler.
You know,
spoiler alert.
Oh, my bad. Spoiler. And, you know.
Lincoln and Booth, you know what happened.
Yeah, for real. And this is like, how can you live with yourself after going through that? You know, I've never killed somebody in my life ever. So just to like, imagine that and to like act it out every night, to look somebody in their eyes before you rip their life away from them. That shit is scary. And just to get away from that, it takes a lot.
And to, sorry to cut you off, Carrie, I don't mean to, but like having to be the person that gets taken out and to look into a person's eyes every night that they're going to take you out and you know what's going to happen and you're waiting for a gun sound. It feels worse when you're waiting for the sound. It's like, I don't know when this is about to happen.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm just here and I'm asking someone not to kill me. And it's like, I have not really had to go through that. So it's like to put myself in a sense of I'm trying to ask someone who's my family, don't kill me. I want to live at this moment. Because Lincoln goes through a lot in the show and this is probably the one moment he really wants to. And he's finally found his sense of living again in this final moment. And he can't have it. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
So on a lighter note, the hardest part for me as director is letting go.
Right.
Letting go of the production because I still come backstage, you know, during intermission.
She's my little shop.
I'm her assistant during intermission. I'm just, I got this for you. I set this up. Do you need anything? You know, it's just letting go for me because after the show opens, really my responsibility is done.
A lot of people don't know, in a lot of productions, you know, some that I've been in and whatever the case, when the show opens, sometimes the director will already, you know, start moving on to the next production.
Yeah.
So that's very commendable.
Yeah, I like being there every night. I really do enjoy being there every night. I like seeing the different nuances of how the show grows, how it changes, how the their relationships deepen. I am the only person who gets to see that.
You've been to most performances?
All of them.
Wow.
I have not missed a performance. I don't intend to miss them.
Love that.
Because I get that whole snapshot view from the first day when we didn't know what we were doing.
Mm.
Reading the script, sitting around here saying, how do we make this magic happen? You know, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? We're going to have fun. And then we get into it and it's not, you know, it's not all fun. It's a work, right. You know, to get to where we need to be. But I have a hard time letting go because I just love the process and I like watching it grow and I like being here every night and I like seeing the nuances and the different breaths and the different rhythms and, you know, look at what happened because this happened. You know, I get to see that. Mm. I only get to see it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a snapshot. It's a long exposure panoramic snapshot.
Oh, that's a beautiful description.
Thank you.
Of course.
My role in the show at the moment is very different from the rest of these folks. So the hardest part is probably filling the water bucket.
Elaborate.
Listen, the spigot sprays me. And it doesn't fill it efficiently enough. I'm in a time crunch. I've got things to do.
Well, I was gonna say. Well, yeah. Well, I wanted to ask, like, what is your most demanding cue? Because it's not all, you know, like it really is a demanding position. I've been in shows where there's, you know, quick changes, quick prop change. There's so many things going on, so it is no joke. What is your most demanding cue? What's a cue that at first you're like, I don't know if I'm going to make it, when I'm cutting it tight? Is there anything like that?
Yes, there is. There's a quick change before scene two that I do. I shove my hand in Rod's butt. Yes,
oh, amen.
Mm. Yes, she does.
Oh. Twice, because there are two shirts I need to get in there, and I'm waiting there for him to get off stage and for Lincoln to, you know, move past, and I'm holding the pants there, and I wait so that his little feces can slip into the pant leg, right? And then and pass him a magazine. He's putting the bottle in there, and I shove my hand down his butt.
Oh,
guys, if that doesn't and get that's you theater. Into the show, I don't know what will.
Yeah,
sacrifice.
And I try and I time it every single time because
I am now ready to smuggle things in my rectum across the border.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yes. Oh, and we use the shoes. They're like little shoulder pads. I get it.
Oh, we're still laughing about smuggling drugs.
Yeah, laughing about smuggling drugs.
Oh, man.
Gotta love it.
But this is a cute little thing that the boys do every time that I have to help them with something. They fist bump me, and it's really sweet, and I like it when you guys do that. It's like a little good luck fist bump. Like, I love
you. Oh, yeah, that's just a, hey, I'm about to go out there. I hope I don't mess this up. It's a, hey, man, let's do this. Especially for me, because you helped me with the last scene, so it's like, ah, man, we're here. Okay, let's get this on. Let's do this. Change my pants. Make sure I got the cards. Make sure I got the water money. Cool. We're going out there. Let's hope we don't mess this up because this is the last scene. Let's hope they leave home.
It's a big one.
A little bit depressed, but also a little bit happy they saw the show.
100%. I put his shoes on him. I like,
really?
Yeah, my thumb is in there, like getting his angle.
Yeah, at first it was weird because it's like, why are you trying to help me right now? That's but then beautiful. It was like, you're already here, so sure, thanks. At first it was definitely weird. It was like, why are you holding? I got it.
Okay.
Is that Cinderella?
Watch, Friday, I'm not going to help him with the quick
that'll add an extra 5 seconds. Yo. We don't want
that. Wow.
Okay, and the last question from our mail time segment. Do you have any pre-show ritual?
Well, I mean, lately it's just been music. Definitely need some music. Yesterday, I'm not gonna lie. Yesterday we went off. I'm not gonna lie. Yesterday
we had an entire concert.
Man, we went off.
I was playing the liquor bottle guitar.
Yeah, but it was because when I came in yesterday, I was like, nah, I need something different than just hip hop. I need something. So I was trying to get back to them old Hot 105 days.
That quiet storm.
And I don't even remember the songs I was playing. I was just playing stuff to get me in the right move. Return of the Mac was the first song I played. I was like, I need this right now.
Hell yeah.
And then at one point, Rod wore a Purple Rain shirt yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, I got to play Purple Rain.
Bangers.
And honestly, it was like the whole day yesterday before the show started. It was just like, all right, I got to get the vibe right. I can't just go out there
throwback songs
and just like not do this. And then right before, what song did I request from Warren yesterday?
Miss Jackson.
Our person who runs the board, he's playing the music before in the pre-show. So we're waiting there to set up. And I was like, you know what? Because Rod asked for a request on Saturday. So I was like, you know what? I'm asking for a request today. So I was like, can I get Miss Jackson by Outkast? And once I heard it, I was like, all right, I'm good. Let's do the show right now.
Oof.
Yeah.
Damn. What song did you request the other day?
What's My Name by DMX.
DMX. What y'all really
you guys
want?
Have good taste, man. All right. Any pre-show rituals?
My pre-show ritual. I try to get to the theater a little bit early so I can try to let go of the day, you know, try to clear my mind and focus. I do a little bit of yoga, a little bit of sun salutations here and there. I like to just run through throwing the cards for this show specifically, you know, because that's such a integral part of, you know, our dynamic. But yeah, and just hanging out with my bro, man, Denzel. That's my fucking dog.
Hey.
Back then, it's like, hey, we gonna listen to this song. Hey. All right, man, hey, put this one on next. Hey this shit flame, yo. And then we just start spitting off lyrics, and then
bro, you can't fake that chemistry. I will say, you can't fake that chemistry. You guys got it down packed. Mm-hmm. Oh man, oh. It's beautiful to see on stage, man. I congratulate you guys.
No, I appreciate it.
Any pre-show rituals?
Prayer. Let everything be in place. Please let everybody do their roles. But I like to check in with everybody just to make sure that they feel good, make sure that they have everything that they need, that there's nothing that's loose, no loose ends, you know, any questions, you know, even right. So... but I just like to check in. I check in with Rod. I check in with Denzel. I check in with Therese, you know, just to make sure that everything is good. And then I go and sit in my little spot. And then I'm on bathroom duty for intermission. You know, that's it.
Yeah, shout out bathroom bouncer.
Yeah.
Hey, hell yeah. All right. Therese, any pre-show rituals?
I ask Rod, do you have your gun? And he responds with,
yo, I always keep that motherfucking thing on
me. I keep telling it. That's a dumb question.
Oh, bro.
I keep telling it. You don't ever ask this man who he got it on him.
Hey, dude. Hey, listen, mama told me don't leave the house unless I got God on me, okay?
Come on, man.
I love that. But similar to Carrie, when I'm acting, I also have like a little prayer and like talk to myself as my character.
Okay, very cool. Very cool.
I mean, for me, other than that, I just meditate. I try to get myself in the mindset. So I try to like visualize certain moments of whatever my character was going through before the show. So this is something I've never told anyone, but like I make up like certain things. So it's like I know what Rod looks like. So I put Rod in certain instances. So where it makes sense to where it's like, okay, cool, I can have that familial relation.
And I'll be watching you over there doing that. You know exactly who you look like? You look like Piccolo when he be image taking. You just be sitting there, like with your legs crossed, like hands like this, and you just be like,
yes, man.
Eyes closed. Like,
for anyone who doesn't know, Piccolo is a character in Dragon Ball Z. Just watch that. He meditates a lot.
He does.
But it's,
and that's how he trains, just like...
Yeah, it's like mental visualization.
Like just like doing different simulations of what could possibly happen ever in life.
Yeah, Rod brought a picture of his mom. So I kind of like, it's weird, but I kind of put an amalgamation of his mom and my mom. Either I cut the face out or I put my mom or I put his mom there. And I try to like connect with that in a sense. Or like I put my dad where it's like, there's a line where I say, there was summer spent laying on the grass and watching the stars. I kind of think of that before the show where it's like, we're literally laying on the grass looking at the stars. And I look at my own father. at least in his face, from what I remember. And I try to make that happen where it's like, and everything that happened before where it's, whether it's someone who passed away or someone who left me, I try to put faces to that to where it makes sense, to where it's like, once I get to those certain moments, it's like, okay, I can feel that. There's a friend who Lincoln loses named Lonnie, and it's like, I put a certain face to that. I'm not going to say who it is, so that way they don't get upset.
Right.
But it's like, there's a face I put to that to someone who I really care about, and it's like, I don't want to ever lose that person. So I put Lonnie as that person where it's like, okay, this is why I feel this way, and I see that person's face as I talk about Lonnie. So I try to do that sometimes. It feels weird now putting that out loud. But
No.
But it works because it brings tears to your eyes every night.
100%.
Yeah, so yeah, for me, I try to put myself in the mindset of what is it that I'm feeling before I walk out there.
Okay.
And meditation helps with that. I try to focus on the AC sound. When the AC comes on, it's like, okay, where is that sound coming from? Is it coming from my left side or my right side? It's coming from my right side. Okay, what is that? What direction exactly is that? Okay, it's right there. And then that helps me to sink into where I'm at, where it's like I can imagine a moment where I'm at in that moment.
And the AC at Main Street sounds like a damn printer, bro. Yes, I'll tell you that now.
So I can easily tell where it's coming from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, 100%. Thank you for sending in those questions. You know what I'm saying? Send those questions in every single week, and we'll read them on the air. Guys, I do have to ask. There is a behemoth elephant in the room, and that is the challenge that is doing a two-person production. I mean, when you're in a show, and I'm only speaking for myself, but there's little things that you can kind of hang on to help you memorize lines. And one of them is obviously different characters. So you can kind of disassociate this scene from someone else because a certain character is in it. You guys don't have that luxury. So talk to me about your memorization process. Talk to me about, again, like having to do an entire production with just one other person to feed off of.
So to begin with, my biggest fear as an actor, I conquered during the show. And that fear was having the first line in the play. Like, I'm the kicker. It's the Super Bowl. You got to kick off the ball. And that's me. Right. So imagine kicking that out of bounds. So like whiffing it.
Right.
And so like that was my biggest fear. Moving past that, every night after the show or after like rehearsal, I would go home and sit outside with my dogs and just run through the lines with them just to like, you know, get something from them. It's like, yeah, they're not talking back. But like, it's like, all right, like you're moving this way. You're the only person here with me, so I'm reacting to you. Yes, it's different from when I'm with Denzel, but we just sort of developed this chemistry just talking about stupid stuff like anime, like wrestling. And then it's like, all right, how can I bring these things that we relate to into the craft, into the art of it? And the memorization, that just comes with the repetition of it, you know, just reading it all over and over again, saying it over and over again. Just like we memorize songs. It's like, you been in the car with your mama. You know them words to that song, but you can't get this math problems right. Like, you know?
Of course.
For me, I had experience working in a two-person show. Last year, ironically, around this time, it was a show called Lungs with the New City Players. Shout out New City Players.
Shout out New City.
Rodriguez. Shout out Tim Davis.
Shout out New City.
Elizabeth.
Rodriguez.
All of y'all. So I had experience working in that. But with this one, it definitely was for me, I don't know what it was, but like I was very trying to get used to working with a new person. So it's like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. It's working with one person. But for me, there's this particular scene that I've told everyone I hate. It is the scene where it's just basically me. He's asleep in the moment. So it's just me. And it's like, I have no one to be like, hey, if I flub, you can just pick up. It's like, no, it's just you. Yep. And it's like, I hope I don't forget something. But no, honestly, it's honestly fun working with just one person. Cause sometimes it's like when someone just adds their energy, it's like, it can mess up something. So it's like when it's just the two of you, it's like, all right, cool. Once you get a groove, it's like, all right, cool. We're just in the groove of it. Let's just keep going. and we got only, we can only go up from here. So let's just keep going. So honestly, it's fun working with even though it is kind of difficult at first, it honestly becomes a very fun thing where it's like, I don't have to worry about anyone else. It's just you and me. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Mm, damn. Yeah, it's like, you know, I got your six, you got my six, and we just out here. And we gonna make it happen. We gonna come back from this difficult mission. We don't know how we getting there, but we gonna get there, you know?
Hey, right. If you mess up, hey, I know where we at. Like, we just gonna keep it going. Hey, if you forget a line, I'm gonna add a line to make it make sense. If I need a segue, I'm gonna make something happen. So let's go.
We all know the emotional toll that it take, that, you know, the ending scenes take on both of you. And I want to get to your performance in a minute, but I do want to ask you, I think it is undervalued, if that's the correct word, the amount of talent that it takes to properly portray someone actually dying. And you do that exceptionally well. I was front row, I was like, is he blinking? He's not blinking.
I'm up there with him.
Yeah, I was like, I was looking at your eyelids. I was, trust me, I was waiting for you to fuck up.
I'm up there with him, and I'm like, you know, in the heat of the moment, and you know, you're like yelling and you're screaming, and you know, like, you know,
I know
spit's coming.
I was like, you're gonna flinch, and he does. Like, oh, it's so good.
The spit drop will drop on his cheek. And he won't even, like, it's acknowledge not, it.
It's crazy. Like, it's crazy. It's,
yeah. It's like, I'm in his grill, you know? And I'm just like...
Oh, no,
like,
it's a lot of laying it on. This man, Rod, just goes, boom. Because there's so much emotion. I can't do anything by it. So I'm just like, well, I'm going to wipe this off after we're done.
And he just lays there. And it's just, like, crazy. Like, you don't even see his chest moving.
That's insane.
Wow.
I'm watching from the curtain. And the tiny little sliver between the curtain and the wall... And I'm just looking at your leg and I'm like, not a single twitch.
You have the best seat in the house. You have the best seat in the house, honestly.
Well, I didn't know that this guy's been staring the whole time.
Eyes open.
Eyes are open.
Oh, I mean, I'm dead. So I've never was trained to learn how to do that. It was just like.
So that death in Terminator 2. When, like, the dude, he was, like, holding a bomb, and he was just like, you did that death better than me, way better 100%, than him.
100%. 100%.
No, I don't know how I did it. It was just like hey, you gotta die, so I gotta lay here. I gotta look like, I can't be like, it's like, right. I mean, I do take certain breaths where it's like, I'm trying to catch my breath because it makes sense to me where it's like, all right, I just got shot.
Right.
I'm trying to catch something.
Right.
But at some point I got to stop breathing because there's a hole in my neck. Just like there's a snake in my boot. There's a hole in my neck.
Yeah.
So,
snake in my boot.
That shit happens.
So at some point I just got to stop. I don't know how I look. I'm just laying there. It's like.
That thing look gangster.
In my mind, I more so think about something else so my eyes can stay open for the most part, because it's hard to keep my eyes open. So that's why I turn my head, so it's like, But it's like, I try to focus as much as possible where it's like my eyes are just open, because obviously my eyes are going to close unless someone does it for me. That was one thing I hated as a kid, where it's like, why did his eyes close? Did he just... He just died so peacefully. but for me, it was like, it was just like a thing where I'm here and he's going about it. And it's like, well, I got to respect it and I got to make sure there's no attention on me. So I'm just not going to breathe as heavy as I normally would. So I take very small breaths and I try to make sure it's like as, I guess, real as possible, where it's like I take and then I just stop for a bit and then I start up again and I stop for a bit where it's like you don't see any movement from me. And hopefully it looks real enough. And I guess it does. But yeah.
It definitely does. Yeah.
Another thing you do really well is play drunk.
Them
scenes where you are drunk is amazing, yo.
Oh, yeah.
I've never actually really, like, fully been drunk like that. So that's
really?
Just, nah, I really haven't.
You be thrilled.
So I just be like, it really like, is just, like, off experiences of me seeing people and me and seeing my friends and stuff like that. It's like, all right, cool. How can I like make that work? So it's like, I remember in college, it was at FAU, shout out FAU, a lot of shout outs today. It was a scene where a professor was talking to another student about being drunk because he had a monologue from a certain scene. And so I was like paying attention to that. And I'm like, okay, cool. How do you move in that certain moment? And for me, it was like, okay, there's certain things where your legs don't really, there's not much control with your legs. So you kind of have to let your legs be able to move freely. And I still remember that. So I was just like, all right, in the last scene, it says he's really hammered. So it's like, all right. I'll just try to see if I can make that work. And each night I try to add something different where I do something different. Last night specifically, I added like an echo. So it was like, I would scream out.
God, that was so funny.
But yeah. Like last night, randomly, I was just like, Booth, Booth. And for some reason, it's like each time I try to think of like what craziness would he do. And honestly, I like that scene in that first part. Because it's a whole monologue for me. So it's like, what can I add to make it at least look more spontaneous?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not as predictable. Or it's like, oh, they've already rehearsed this. Where it's like, no, he's doing something completely different. Like, there's a moment I opened up the window and I just yell out, ta-da. And ta-da, motherfucker. And it's like, that was a random moment in rehearsals where it was like, I remember I was like, I asked Carrie, I'm like, can I just go to the window? And she was like, sure, what are you going to use it for? She looked confused at first. And I was like, it just came to me, sure. So I went there, ta-da, motherfucker, ta-da. And she was like, I like it. And I was like, thanks. And each time I kind of just like try to elaborate it more where I go to the window. And I think yesterday I even got Teresa to laugh even more, especially because I just went even longer with it. Yeah, and yeah, I just went even more with it.
Hell yeah.
I was laughing.
Yeah, so it's like, honestly, I don't know. It's just like, for me, acting is just a vessel to be able to just do different things that you haven't really been able to do. And I just hope every time I'm able to pull it off. And so far, I've been good. So
100%, 100%. And we're going to get to your end of the show process in a bit. But every single week, you know what I'm saying? We have three segments. And the second one is actually the movie review of the week. And in this beautiful segment, we ask our, again, illustrious guests for a movie, a TV show, anything that you're binging that you would recommend to our listeners, you know, something ideally 5 out of 5 stars. And given that we are in the theatrical space, feel free to suggest a theatrical production as well. Starting from the left.
Well, I mean, if we're talking theater, then Top Dog, Underdog at the Main Street Players, just pointing that out there.
We open till October 16th.
October 16th. You get to hear our illustrious voices. You get to see our faces. But no, in terms of movies, I just saw Top Gun Maverick. And that movie is amazing. It is really good. So I would say Top Gun Maverick is probably my recommendation.
I mean, only thing I've been watching as of late is just One Piece.
One Piece is great.
Yes, seriously.
It is a very long show.
It's long, but
But you will enjoy every minute.
It's worth it.
Please watch One Piece. Listen, it's only 1,000 episodes.
There are so many characters, and you will have developed feelings for all of them by the time you figure out why they're here on this earth, in this fictional world. So yeah, One Piece, I think I'm on episode like almost the 400 right now.
Jeez.
I'm on episode
How
1,
many
000.
Are there?
There's 1,000.
1,035.
Yeah.
Oh.
The show's been going since 1998.
1999,
oh, wow.
Actually.
1999.
Yeah.
That's serious.
Yeah, it's 1,035 at the moment. This coming weekend will be 1,036.
One Piece.
It's still going on?
Yes, it's still going on.
Still going.
It's still happening.
To this day.
To this day.
Shout out Deontay Wilder. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Thank you.
Come on. Okay.
I recently watched Jazzman's Blues on Netflix, which I enjoyed.
Okay.
Tyler Perry wrote it, directed, and produced it. And my friend Marietta Carter Narcisse did the makeup.
Okay, like, very cool.
So
wow.
I watched it and it was a really good movie.
Oh, wow.
It had me going.
Okay, okay. And movie, TV, theater, whatever the case.
I just finished watching on HBO, The Rehearsal, which is based on Nathan For You.
Okay.
But also Gordita Chronicles.
Okay, okay.
Has anyone seen that?
I haven't, but I've heard of it.
It takes place in Hialeah.
Respect.
In the 80s.
from a family from DR.
Was it shot on location? Like, was it shot here?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, because there's no film incentives.
Things have changed and modernized now.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Very good show.
Yeah. Okay, very cool. Thank you for those suggestions. Okay, so talk to me about that inevitable last scene. You know, we talked about it so much after the show at the dinner. And you had mentioned it, that not only was it inevitable, but that to a certain extent, you want it to happen already.
Yeah, there's a feeling at the end of the show, after all of the stuff that they've gone through, all this rigmarole between them and just the tension, that it's almost a relief when Booth assassinates Lincoln. This tension has been going on for so long, and you wonder what is going to be the end. Because of their names, it's already foretold. They can't escape their fates. But you just kind of have a sense of exhaling once the gun goes off, you know. And sometimes I feel a sense of relief for Lincoln. Sometimes I feel a sense of relief for Booth. You know, it varies from night to night.
Right.
You know, sometimes I feel a sense of relief for me. I can exhale. Oh, it's happened. You know.
Right. But
it's just a sense. It's an exhaling that happens at that moment.
What kind of headspace do you have to get into for that scene? And also, during the rehearsal process, did that scene morph a lot? Or from the get-go, did it have that level of intensity? And did you guys kind of have it down-packed? Or did you kind of have to mold it?
So it was not that level of intensity in the rehearsal process until we got to...
Until it was just like, hey... So you're supposed to scream in this last part. When are we going to get that scream? And it's like, oh, challenge accepted. Right. I got you.
Yeah, it was like we've gone through the rehearsal process. And I know that this is going to be taxing. And I know you're going to have to do it over and over and over and over. I know you can bring it. I know you're going to have to bring it. Both of you are going to have to go there in this scene. And so it really was like... the 16th, what was that date? The 16th, that our run that we had, our designer run.
The designer run.
So it was really our designer run when the designers were there to see what was going to happen. That was the first night that he went there. We had blocked it out, but that was the first night that he had actually gone there with the emotion of what, because that was the day before we go into, we have that day. Then we had a day off, and then we went into tech week.
Right.
So that was the day that he went there, and it was like, okay, so that's what's going to happen. Okay, this is good. Okay, I can work with that. That's all right. And we'll work on it some more next
week. Yeah. It's funny. Tying everything together, speaking about Muhammad Ali, I always say, because I do train like MMA on the side as a hobby and as a workout, I always say the similarities between like boxing and MMA and theater are uncanny, because what you're telling me right now is pretty much that you want to do light sparring for the fight camp, which is what you do. You do like, you don't go all out, you 50%, 60%, 70%, because you don't want to get knocked out in a sparring camp and then not be able to do the fight.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. It's like you're doing a light sparring until tech week, until the week of the fight.
And then you got to practice like you play after that. You know, it's just a lot of things to wrap my head around. There's a lot of underlying elements and various undercurrents of feelings and emotions that are just going through my head. And I was told once when I was, you know, doing my acting training, it's like the most interesting thing is to see like the fight, to keep all that inside, you know, just so 100%. You can see like the inner turmoil. And just like once that floodgates open, it's just like, yeah, I know what my blocking is, but it's just like all the emotions, they just pour out, and it's just like a river, pretty much, man. And it's tough to get into, but also just going through the whole play and telling the story and telling the truth, you know, and that what really helps me get into it, just like really looking into this man's eyes, like I was saying, before, you know, this inevitable moment happens. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, man. And like, just to see your brother laying there and you're verbally berating him while he's like that, you know? And then, you know, the adrenaline wears off and it's like, what the fuck did I just do? You know? Like, now I gotta live with this. You know? How am I gonna live with this? You know? It's just also a relief in a lot of ways, but also hard to process and to let go. It's a lot. It's a lot to process. It's a lot to release. It's a lot to hold on to until you just can't no more. But it's also a lot of fun. It's also a lot of fun just to be ugly and disgusting and...
It's a lot of fun to kill me?
Yes. Actually, it is, man. Because that's not who I am in normal life, you know? So just to be a scumbag for an undisclosed amount of time on the stage, it's liberating. It's actually liberating. Sorry, not sorry.
Guys, talk to me about your relationship with reviews. I know the reviews, I mean, we'd be stupid to not mention that the reviews have been raving. What is your relationship with reviews? Are you the type to look at them during a production? Are you not the type? Both from an actor's perspective or a directorial perspective or both. How do you feel about reviews?
I like them. I don't really... one of the things I was always... A lot of actors have always tried to get into my head was just like, do what you feel comfortable with. They're going to either like it or they're not going to like it. And I can't base my performance based off of them. I should only work off of what I've been working with and what my director has allowed me to be able to do. And that is what we're doing. And their opinion is valid, but it's not. If I let it control my entire performance, then it would be something completely different.
Right.
So I appreciate them. I appreciate them coming out to the show. I appreciate them coming to see the show, see what we've actually put all our effort in. But yeah, no, I don't put too much credit into them, except one. There was one time I got that fuels me to this day. It's it gives me my Jordan thing where I took it personal. So I guess for me that one review that I got one time was just like, all right.
Word.
I got that and some other stuff that I never got kind of gets me where I'm like, you know what, man, I got to kind of like bring it each time sometimes. Cause it's like, y'all didn't see what I could do. Now I have to make sure other people know what I can do. So that way no one else ever looks at me that way.
Good for you for using it as a motivation.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, get on your job. Yeah, man. Reviews. I mean, I read them. I don't put a lot of, you know, stock or like weight in it or whatever, you know, like you said, it's just one person's opinion, you know, and it just so happens that, you know, that's the opinion that's publicized.
Right.
But, you know, it's just the same as, you know, Therese saying, oh, you were awesome. Carrie saying you suck tonight. You saying, you know, this is the greatest thing I ever seen.
Right. Disclaimer, saying, oh, she has never said we sucked. You know? She has never once said that. Do not think she ever said that to you. She has never once said that to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, it's nice to know what people think. But at the end of the day, I know what I did. I know the work we put in. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. If you love it, I'm glad.
See, yeah. I ain't gonna lie, that's different for me because I don't really know what I do up there. It's like, I'm just up there. I don't pay attention as much. So it's like, I don't know if I did good. I don't know if I did bad. I don't ever have that thing of, oh, I did really good tonight. Sometimes I have that feeling, but I don't ever like leave going like, man, I did really good tonight. Right. It's more so like a, and we got the job done, man. We got through it, and we didn't have a lot of issues we could have had.
Right.
And for me, it's that I always worry about, like, a patron, where it's like, hey, man, you took the time to come and see us. You didn't know who we were. You didn't know anything about us. You just knew we were doing a show. And that means the world to me that you took the time out of your day to come and see us. You could have been anywhere else, but you took the time to be here.
Yeah.
And for me, as an actor, my biggest thing is to be an escape for anybody who comes out to see me perform, in the sense of, if you took the time out to see me perform in any capacity, whatever it was, I hope that I'm able to be some form of escape for you, and whatever it is that you're going through, whatever it is that you're dealing with, that I'm able to alleviate you of that for whatever amount of time I got you for. And if I'm able to do that and I'm able to pull that off, then I did my job for the night. And that's what that means to me. So even if you give me a review, as long as I did that for one person, if everyone else hates me, as long as one person liked what I did or loved what I did, then I know I did my job right.
That's what's up.
Reviews are important.
Okay.
Because it gives advertising for the show. And also, that advertising for the show can make or break your show with the headline.
Oh, yeah.
A reviewer can put a headline in that says something positive.
Yeah.
And it will, just the headline, people see the headline and they'll go and see the show without even reading the review. Or similarly, put something negative in the headline, you know, and then say, oh, yeah, well, I was going to go see that anyway. You know?
Right.
But I do like that reviews are advertisements for the show. I do not believe that the review should change the production. I don't change anything after a reviewer has said that they liked or disliked something. The show is as it is, because I believe that I have followed the instruction manual, which is the script.
Right.
I followed the instruction manual. We have put all the pieces together. The mastermind has come together with all of us putting in our energies and our focusing. And here we have this absolutely precious jewel that is here to be experienced. And it's meant to be experienced as we put it together, because practice makes perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And we have practice to get it here. So that reviewer is going to see something and they come from their own personal opinion and review it. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming out. And people will come and they will have their own opinions and their own experiences. And I love that, you know, because we do it for the public.
Of course.
You know, we don't necessarily do it for reviews.
No.
You know, we do it for the public. We create this art so that people can come and experience it and, you know, have an experience.
Of course.
Yeah.
I have a love-hate relationship with them, because... Okay. You know, as an actor, like, I feel similarly to what Carrie and Denzel said about, you know, like, theater is escapism, and, you know, you want the patron, the audience, to feel a sense of, like, falling into the piece and you know, really being in the moment and, like, feeling connected to something, finding little pieces of themselves. I mean, you know, like, this play, I couldn't be further from relating to Booth and Lincoln, but I also do in some ways, and I find myself, you know, understanding them in ways I, you know, didn't think I would.
Right.
And but also, like what Carrie was saying about advertisement, I think that in this age of social media and phones, especially post-pandemic, theater has really suffered. This industry is really, really, really suffered. And when you can repost something that says, you know, a positive review of a show with that headline,
right,
it stands out, and it'll help those ticket sales. It'll help garner new attention. And I, especially from a stage management perspective, right? Like, I love when those actors and the director and the designers are getting the credit that they so deserve.
Of course. 'Cause
I've gotten to see that process from table read to now, right?
Yeah.
And hearing the gasps, hearing the laughs, hearing the applause, hearing all of that every night is so rewarding, because I'm like cheering for them too. And
right.
Like, I love that, you know, it's been getting some good feedback. So
wow.
Yeah.
Branching off of that, what has been some of the more gratifying moments of this run so far for you guys?
When I hear Mystical come on. Nah, but seriously, just the reception that we've gotten in taking on this task of doing this such a gritty work of art, just to have that reception of like people hating this character that I just portrayed, but also being so loving that, you know, we just put our whole heart and soul out there for them to be entertained by it, you know? And just like the reception from the audience, just like the feeling of the weight being lifted, just like the relief of having gotten through this monstrosity of a play, you know? So that's really, really rewarding.
Awesome.
For me, just the privilege of creating art.
You gotta love it.
It's a joy, it's a privilege. I mean, everybody doesn't get to participate, and I'm just so happy to be able to participate. I also did have a great night where I had 13 cousins come to the show one night. I had 3 cousins that came down from Atlanta, Glorious, Allison, and Leah.
Shout out to them.
Coming down from Atlanta to be here for opening weekend of the show, and then other cousins knew that they were coming, and so they decided to get their tickets, and these other 3 cousins came, and these other 2 cousins
came.
And 2 cousins came, and so it was just like that was really gratifying.
That's a whole, yeah.
Yeah, that was gratifying.
Of course. Yeah. Wow.
But I don't want to, you know, but just also just being able to create art.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I love to do. And just the privilege of being able to work with people who also want to create art and bring perfection, you know, our version of perfection to the stage and present it to the audience. That's an absolute privilege, and it's so gratifying to me.
Wow. And I know you told us that, you know, the most gratifying was basically seeing it from sketch to masterpiece, but is there anything you want to add on to that?
It really is just such a thrill to have seen these actors grow into their characters and find moments like that they really have become them when they're on stage. And I an actor is an observer, right?
Of course.
So, like, I learned so much.
A professional observer.
Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from watching the both of them. I've learned from watching Carrie direct, you know, and it's truly been a privilege and an honor to like be a part of it and, you know, put more skills in my little toolbox.
Right, of course.
And I do a lot of work with children. So cool. Getting to do something like the audience is meant for adults. Like, I don't think anyone should be bringing any kids to the show.
Right,
right.
Yeah. yeah, you definitely need to get a babysitter for this one, you know?
But, like, you know, I really feel it each night when we've already said the spoiler, but when Lincoln says that don't, that is something that we talked about earlier, about that space that they get to have, those moments of silence, that, you know, that breathing room, those pauses, because that's so true to life. You know, we stammer, like I'm stuttering right now, you know, we take those moments where there's so much subtext, where we're feeling those moments. And I don't know. I love that moment. Obviously it's heartbreaking,
right?
But I love it because we can feel.
Of course.
We're able to feel, and these two guys make you feel every night.
By the buckets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the buckets. being a stage manager, and correct me if I'm wrong, the first time for this one, right?
Yes.
What are some things that you were able to see through these glasses that you can take with you when you act again?
They really listen to each other.
Mm.
They really listen to each other on stage, and the time that they have taken in their characters. Like, there was one day that Denzel and I spent like an hour just dissecting the play.
Hell
after
yeah.
Rehearsal. And I think that those conversations are so important, priceless, because because there's so much. It's like he says, there's so much to the cards. There's so much to the cards. I find myself talking about this play so much, and I'm like, there's so much to the play. You know, like, you know, doing your homework as an actor, like answering all those questions, considering everything that goes into it, that it's not, it obviously we know that it is not just lines, but I love those questions that you can ask yourself. And I love how these two really, they really listen. They're very present. They take their time. They don't rush anything. They really, truly are simple and honest. You know, and I think that that's really important, to just be truly present in the moment. And, you know, there are some times that, like, they burp on stage.
Oh, yeah.
People ask me, they're like, was that scripted? And I'm like, no, they're having fun.
You
did.
Yeah.
They?
That was a very broad statement.
You did. Very broad.
Yeah. That was a very broad statement.
Yeah, but most of the time. Most of the time, who is it?
It's because he eats so fast. He has to eat so fast. And then he downs the champagne.
I down the champagne first, and then he follows.
Yeah. Damn. Oh,
so it's not, God. No, there's no they. I'm Roger throwing him underneath.
Well, I remember when I was going to ask about the burping too, though. I was going to ask if that was a character choice.
Hey, I'm throwing him there.
No, that was like a real bodily function.
Damn.
Yeah, man. So.
Damn.
Yeah.
But your body made a cameo like that, you know? Like, sheesh.
But, you know, Roger could have made the choice stifle that burp. He could have made the choice to just, you know, be like, not do it.
Yeah.
But I love that it's become part of the show.
He's like, no, I'm riding this bad boy.
Right. Yeah. Because that's something Booth would do.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Oh. Definitely. And, like, the first time it happened, it was just like, you know, it's like, that was a surprise.
Clutch my pearls.
Like, how do we move on from here? But now it's just like, yeah, man. So I was saying, you know, it's awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'm saying? Every single week we have three, I said three segments. And the last one is the quest for the truth. You know what I'm saying? And in this beautiful segment, we ask our illustrious guests, you know what I'm saying, a random, emphasis on the word random, question from this here deck of cards. I don't know what it's going to be. They don't know what it's going to be, but here we go. To the cast of Top Dog Underdog. Okay, here we go. What is something you think everyone should do at least once in their lives? Without looking like Confucius over here.
I don't know. Go ahead, man.
Everything that they want to do.
Okay.
That their heart desires, that leads them to goodness and purity of happiness and joyous feelings. I don't know.
I like that. There you go.
I don't want to be limiting.
No, I like that. Sometimes I start a sentence and I don't know where it's going to end. And that's the vibe that gave me. I love that. Yeah, yeah, that was great. What is something that everyone should do at least once in their lives?
I guess take a chance on you. Bet on yourself at least once and see what happens. I did that with acting, and I got here. So I don't know how far it's going to take me. I hope it takes me farther. But I would just say, for any person who wants to achieve something, whoever, if you have a dream or anything like that and you don't know if you should go for it, I would just say take a chance on yourself and then see what happens. So I would say at least once in your life, take a bet on yourself and then see what happens.
Yeah.
That's good. That was good.
Yeah, man, go after that, man. Go after.
It's tough to follow.
I know.
I gotta really think about this one.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it because the both of them said something really deep and profound and nice. And I'm right here thinking, like, you know, explicit.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
No!
You're like, oh, man, you gotta rip a good bong, boy. You know what I'm saying?
Go to no. the Everglades.
Go to right the now. Everglades. Oh, hell yeah. Get in tune with Mother Nature, man. Yeah, you know what I'm like saying?
Soak in it.
Save wildlife.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I just saved it. You see? It can be explicit. We're definitely not a PG show.
I guess what everybody should do is just not overthink like I'm doing right now about
man,
you know,
what?
This question. Because it definitely hinders you. It's hindering me right now. So okay. Don't overthink too much. Just get out there and like Nike, just do it.
Okay.
Just like balls to the walls and go.
Everybody should at least once go see a live show. A live theatrical.
Very
event.
Good. Yes. Very good.
At yes. least once. You might like it.
You know, I have an answer now.
There we go.
I thought of something.
Okay.
And I will tell you. I think you should at least once see a water ski stunt show.
That is very specific. Remarkable. It's very okay. specific.
Because hear me out. I
follow up question.
So many questions.
What?
No, go ahead.
I did a gig.
Okay.
In Legoland, which resides in Winter Haven, Florida.
Okay.
In Cypress Gardens.
You got the coordinates?
There's research on this. Apparently, Dick Pope used to.
Who?
Richard.
I forgot what it's called. I think it's like the Florida Pool.
Okay.
I don't remember the year, but it was a long time ago. And it's Winter Haven is famously known for water skiing.
Okay.
And so then when Legoland started to, you know, Legoland mm-hmm. was a thing, they were like, well, how can we incorporate the famous water skiing into this amusement park? So they made a stunt show. And so there's actors playing pirates and you have these mascot costumes, but they're Lego mascots. Anyway, all this to say that these athletes / performers look like mermen because they go all the way up in the air and there's water and they do all these crazy stunts. And it's so cool because I'm not an athlete. I don't do sports. I don't really watch a lot of sports, but I was very fascinated by this particular sport. And I love that it was like had performance elements. I was very fascinated. I can't speak highly enough about those people. They do
Damn.
A great job.
Wow, that's beautiful. Good.
Water ski stunt show.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Be your own mermaid, you know? Yeah. And that's beautiful. It reminds me of the 13th year of Disney
Channel. Sorry, if I may, what I found self-gratitude in terms of the show was just seeing, I realized I never responded. I just realized I never gave an answer.
I'm going to chime in, though.
it was just seeing every person that showed up so far. The fact that we actually had a crowd meant a lot. And also that people actually liked that I sang. I honestly don't think I'm a singer. So
you killed it.
Thank you.
You killed it.
Sounds like Anthony Hamilton, don't it?
No, I don't.
Yes.
This was the first time I ever sang in front of people, like a group of people. So I still don't like it, but I mean, I appreciated that as well. And seeing a review bring it up was like, thanks. Okay. That's
right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I got out of that.
Wow.
And also being here at this moment, it's very gratifying right now. I've never done anything like this. So being here at this moment is very gratifying.
You. Of course, of course. Well, it's an honor to have every single one of you. I want to ask, what was the learning curve like for, and what's the correct terminology? Card shuffling or what's the correct?
Card Monty.
There we go. Okay. How long did it take you to master? How long did you practice? Talk to me a little bit about that.
So, me and my stepbrother, we used to get into a lot of trouble growing up.
Okay.
And so, my mom would be like, all right, that PlayStation is coming out the room. Unplug that TV. Y'all not watching TV. Y'all not playing no video games. Y'all not going outside. It's just homework, iron them clothes, wash some dishes, get in the bed, right?
Right.
So, for a long time, me and my stepbro, we would just play cards. We wasn't like really like doing a three-card Monty. We just like right. do it every now and then, just like, you know, do it. But we played speed a lot. Mm. And like every now and then it's like, all right, man, get your lunch money. We betting this time. And
I would lose. I'd get pissed off, you know. Just like everything, man. I lose at Madden. I break the controller, you know. But that one time I did win, he turned off the video game and I was pissed off and I broke the controller again, you know. But yeah, growing up, me and my stepbrother, we played a lot of cards, man. Tunk, spades, speed, you know. So just that familiarity with the cards, you know, from being a adolescent, that carried over, you know. Right. I never would have thought that me and my stepbrother getting into trouble, getting on punishment, would lead me to letting y'all believe that I threw the cards for real. You know? No.
Character research over That's here. Right. Oh, man. How about you? How long did it take you?
I mean, it was just, I would practice a couple times and I would try to see if I could get it. I never had experience with cards like Rod had. So it was more so just like, we're just trying to see if we can make this work. And then after a while, we'd just be like, all right, how fast can you get with it? And then depending on how fast I can get, it would be like, all right, cool. Can we do it with words now? And the way I did it with words the first time, I would just play some music. I think I played Kanye or some old Kanye. I think I played off a Graduation album. And I was just, I knew the words. So like I would just.
Playing Champion.
Yeah, I was. I think it was Champion. I think that was actually the song I was playing. I think it was actually Champion. And I was just literally doing that at the moment. I was like, all right, cool. Can I do this? And I think it was Ultra Light Beam by Kanye. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that. Oh, I knew the words to that. So I was just like trying to make sure I could do a song while actually doing it. And then once I was like, all right, cool, I can do that. It's like, all right, just make sure I got my lines down. How fast can I do it? And I knew from other times, if I can get my lines down, I can say them fast enough. So it's like, who can see the blackout? Who can see the blackout? So it's like, all right, as long as I know it, I can do this as fast as she might want me to do it. Right. So it was just a matter of what can I master at this certain moment. And that probably took a couple of weeks to really like hone in on. And after that, it pretty much got pretty easy.
Were you ever concerned regarding them having to master something that is that's a physicality trait, such as the three card Monty? Did you guys have a deck of cards from day one in rehearsals, or at what point did you introduce that?
We had cards. Yeah, from the day that we started, when we got on our feet, we had cards. And they didn't throw the cards, but the cards were there.
Okay.
They read their script because, you know, for a long time, the script is in the hand. But the cards were present, so they knew they had to master the cards. And I showed them what I wanted. There are lots of YouTube videos.
Right.
You know, if I can do this, come on, you can do this too. It's right. Not really about the way you do it. It's just a matter of that you do it.
Right.
You know, that you do have the trickery of the hands, you know. Well, I mean, well, they're over there scoffing and whatever. I know what I want. I want to see it. Uh-huh. If I don't see it, I'll comment on it.
Okay.
If I didn't see it, then I would have said something about it, but I saw it.
So okay.
I didn't have to say a whole lot about it.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm assuming that the speed that you wanted was there already.
Yeah, they didn't want to embarrass themselves.
That's very true. That's very true. That's very true.
I already thought I was, but
and what Kendrick Lamar said, whatever. But I never get embarrassed.
How long was the rehearsal process, and did you think that you needed more time or no?
We started the last week of August with the rehearsals that Monday. I think it was August 23rd, and the show opened on September 23rd. So we had Monday through Friday rehearsals, and then we had we had one Sunday that was an off day that we just came in and worked anyway. And then we went into Tech Week, but it wasn't until Tech Week that I started thinking, oh, do we need more time? You know, but at that point, you kind of have to trust the process. You know?
Of course.
We've been here, we've been working. We've been working diligently, and like I said before, practice makes perfect.
Right.
Practice makes perfect. So even when we're not perfect, we do what we practice, and that will get us there.
Mm.
You know, we will get there. You know, so it was the right amount of time.
Okay. How was this particular tech week? How was that experience for everybody?
I mean, it, at least in terms of when we started, it helped a lot better to get into the groove of how things were going to be. Especially because at first, every time with a tech week, it's like you start rehearsal, you're just working in an area. You don't know how exactly things are going to be built up. Mm. You don't know how things, how your spacing is going to actually be. You're just moving.
Right.
And then once you start seeing the space, it's like, oh, I don't have as much room as I thought, do I?
Right.
I got to start like thinking about different ways of doing things. Like I remember one time we were thinking about the way that the coat I come in with, it was supposed to be next to me at one point. Then I got moved and it was like, all right, we got to figure out where this is going. And all right, where is this going to be at? So I know exactly where I'm moving, so I don't get confused later on. But once everything came together, it was like, all right, this is what we're doing. This is what we're trying to get. This is what we're trying to portray. And honestly, the tech week was a lot easier, at least for me, than like regular rehearsals. Cause it was like, all right, cool. We're running the whole show. We know exactly what the cue is. We know how things are going. We know exactly where we're supposed to be at. If you're not in your cue yet, hey, that light's going to be right here. So, you know, you got to be there. So, no, honestly, tech week actually helped a lot more in terms of, at least for me, to getting me better prepared for what we were about to do.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that because there aren't a lot of technical aspects in this show. So we were able to maximize the time we had in the space, you know? Right. It made it feel more like, all right, we're moving in. And this is your space. All right, you know, this is how the lights work. This is, you know, what this is. This is going to be right here. All right, y'all work with it. Y'all get comfortable. And I feel like this tech week was different because we had more time to explore as the elements were coming in. It's not like, all right, we got to, you know, you guys got to accommodate to these elements. You know, right. We have more time to really get it into us, you know, and become one with it, get married to it, you know? Right. So that was really nice to experience and go through. It was great to have that culmination and just that blend during that week.
How was tech week for you and having the ability to zoom out and see the big picture?
Tech week for me is difficult because it's the letting go process.
Oh, yeah.
My job is almost done. I also love Tech Week because that's when I get to problem solve and see what things, you know, there's a problem here, this is how we solve it. Okay, this prop is not in place. Okay, let's put it here so it'll be in place. This costume is over here instead of being over here. Let's figure out the motivation for moving over there. How do we make that work? I love doing that type of stuff because that's where we seam everything together and make the show seem less, you know. But also, like I said, it's the letting go process for me because I was on stage during Tech Week moving things around. You know, I was tucking pants and cuffing and moving this chair and this needs to be here and let me take this garbage out, you know.
Yeah.
To the point where one of the producers was like, you can't do that anymore.
There was one day in Tech Week where like I was struggling with a bow tie. It was the first bow tie we had, and it was that the clip was so tight on there.
Yeah,
I couldn't get it off, and literally she walked up in the middle, just took it off. And I was like, "Thanks."
Because for me, also Tech Week is about getting timing done,
right?
And I knew we can replace this bow tie, but I don't want you to be lagging behind in this moment with this. When emotionally you're supposed to already have been moving on to something else. So that's why I was just like, he's struggling with this tie and this moment is about to happen. And if we don't get this tie off, then this moment can't happen.
Of course.
And we can't waste any time with this tie. So I know that the costume designer and Julina Esposito is gonna get another tie.
Shout out.
Shout out.
And we're gonna get another tie, you know, but this moment right here, we're done with that, you know? So I'm that type of, it's letting go, but it's also being hands-on and it's also making sure that the timing happens, you know? So I'm not going to let go before the timing is right.
Okay. Yep.
But, but I love all that problem solving stuff that happens in Tech Week.
That's so cool. And how was the Tech Week from the stage manager's perspective?
So, It was my first time stage managing, and I'm someone that I tend to put a lot of pressure on myself to like get something perfect, and like, you know, I also have a lot of respect for the theater. The theater is my church, and so I like to be of service however I can. And so one of the difficulties of being the stage manager is that like you're kind of expected to have all the answers. And Tech Week is also when you're finding what works and what doesn't work and identifying issues and problem solving, like Carrie was saying. So sometimes I would have to like emotionally regulate and be like, okay, it's okay. It's okay to not have the answers right now, but I will work on it for you. I will work on it and see what can be done. And I have successfully convinced everybody in the cast and crew of Top Dog Underdog that I am organized.
Hell yeah. There we go. There we go.
Give them the old razzle dazzle. There we go.
The old razzle dazzle.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah. And that she's perfectionism, comes in and it works.
Oh, comes in clutch, huh?
Yeah, it works.
I certainly had to get organized and like, you know, figure out when this happens,
right.
What can we do to prevent that from happening again, you know? And just like being on top of it. And so it was a learning experience. Mm. And that's why I signed up for it in the first place. You know, I knew this would be a giant responsibility, and I knew that Tech Week would certainly be stressful. I was very anxious, but got through it, and I've learned so much, and I couldn't be more grateful. You know,
you wanted a challenge, and you got it.
Yes, yes.
There we go.
Exactly.
And you excelled at it.
Yeah.
I do want to ask, talk to me about the set design and the costume design and how those elements aided you in getting into your characters.
At least in terms of the set,
Danny Nieves.
Shout out Danny.
Danny Nieves.
Just for you.
Yeah.
When the walls came up, shout out Attack on Titan for anyone who understands that. but when the walls came up, honestly, it was like, okay, this is how much room I really have. Because before that, I was kind of playing in a sense of there was a lot more room that I had in my little corner. Mm-hmm. And then I realized I didn't have that much room in my corner. So it definitely made it more claustrophobic, where it was like, I can't really move as much. So it definitely felt like this wasn't my home. This is someone else's house. I'm just here. I can't really move as freely. I can move, but I can't do like as much as I would like. Kind of felt like I was a visitor at a place I'm trying to sleep at. So it definitely helped out with that. And the costumes definitely helped in the sense of what it is that we were trying to convey, especially the second scene when we get the suits. I guess I'm just gonna say it, that are stolen.
boosted.
Yes. Basically, when we try those on, I've never had to change on stage before, so that definitely in the motion of it, trying to find some having clothes that really feel good in that moment helps to feel more free to move, especially when it's a suit where it's like, you know what, this is something that's very nice to own. And it's like having a scene where it's like, it's a very joyful scene for the most part. So in that, the costume design really helps in the sense of it feels free to move. It doesn't feel like I'm constricted in any sort of way. And I feel comfortable. The only time I feel constricted is in the very first scene where I come in as Abe Lincoln.
Okay.
And that's more so just me personally, but also in terms of how much I have on. I have on a shirt, bow tie, a vest, the coat, the shoes, the big boots, all that. So,
I will say,
and the beard and everything.
I will say, as far as stage business goes, it would be a nightmare for me to have to like remove face paint in a scene. And mm-hmm. You do that, you make it look like it's no big deal. I would hit.
Trust me, I it took a lot of process.
And you get all of it out, man. It's insane.
I really don't. It takes a process to even try to get most of that off. I remember at first we tried to do everything, my whole face, and that was not working. it was not working. So we had to find some type of ways to get it off quicker. Because it's a very fast transition.
Yeah.
So just trying to get there, and it's like, all right, cool. Try to get to that point, try to get it off. and hopefully I get enough off where I can keep looking at the mirror.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's off enough where it doesn't look too weird later on. Because I remember in rehearsal, it was a certain night where a bunch of it was still on.
Yeah.
And Carrie's only note that night was, just get the makeup off. And I'm like, thanks. Thanks, got it. I know. Oh, thanks.
My God.
So, yeah. Basically, that first scene is the only time I feel constricted. Okay. I think that's meant to really be how it's supposed to be. So.
Awesome. Okay.
You know, usually when, you know, you're going through the process of a play and then, like, you come in and you have that surprise moment of the set is up, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, actually, it's like Christmas morning.
Because it's like, oh, this is my house.
Yeah.
Yo, hell yeah, man. I love this shit, man. So for me, that's what it felt like. It's like, this is my home. This is my humble abode, you know? Right. This is everything that I need all right here, you know? So that was really special. I love that set, man. It's home, you know?
Yeah.
And the costuming, I got my shirt washed this past weekend, and I got my shirt back, and it was clean. And I was just like, man, I can't put this on, man. My shirt's too clean, man. I feel like, you know, like somebody I'm not.
Right.
You know? So I really feel like that dingy, dirtied up undershirt is just like, it's like what I need to embody this character. You know, it's like the final piece to the puzzle.
It's
you
your
know?
Armor it, right it, there.
It's final form.
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel good, man. I love that dirty up undershirt.
Hell yeah. All right. What about you guys? In regards to the set and the costuming design.
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's lovely. But like I said, when those things start coming in, that means that I'm letting go.
Yeah.
You know, because I no longer have to imagine what it is. They no longer have to imagine what the mood is like. And what the tone is with the clothes, you know, but the clothes and the set, they all set the tone for the audience. So.
Do you think they matched your vision?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, yeah. I loved everything about the set and also the costumes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I told them the first week that they were going to have to take their clothes off
on
stage, you know, and be in boxers.
Right.
You know, because this is what you do when you get home. You take your clothes off. Get comfortable.
Yeah.
Take off the day. Take off the work.
Yeah.
And
Or double boxers, you know what I'm saying? The theater world, that's how they did it in Main Street when I did it. And I tried to, trust me, I tried to fight it. I was like, we got to sell tickets. Let's do one boxer. Yeah. They wouldn't.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Yeah.
So my first show at Main Street, I was butt-ass naked.
Amen.
Like face down.
The way God intended.
On a white carpet.
Okay.
Center stage.
Okay.
Like, you know, the lights.
Oh, I did hear about this. Yes.
And then the lights go down. And then lights come back up.
Yes.
And there's my black ass. It's like on a white carpet. You know what I'm saying? And so Dennis is just like, hey, listen, Rod, I don't care what you say, man, but you're not about to be out here slaying that thing. Sock, and I don't want you telling me that it don't fit, you know? So there was one night.
The actual cock sock?
There was one night.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
They're like, Rod, listen. So here it is, going to the bathroom, try that thing on.
Try that.
Goddamn G-string.
Nah. Damn. So, Borat style, bro.
So I'm in the bathroom, right? Just like with this sitting in the sink. They got a black one, a white one, and like a gray one. Something stupid, right?
Oh, they have variety. That's nice.
Right. So I'm there with it just sitting in the sink, and I'm looking at myself in the mirror. And I'm just like, you really about to do this, man? And it's like, all right, man. Just like.
That's
the art, you know? Yeah. I'm going to do it for the art.
As I seen from 8 Mile, bro.
I done finally talked myself, you know, into doing this, right? So I strip down. Pick up the G-string. Give myself one last look. And I go to put my feet in, right?
Mm.
And I start lifting it up.
That visual.
And it touches my thighs, and I'm just like, nope. It's like, oh, hey, I'm not doing it. I can't do it, man. So the double boxers is not a problem.
There you go.
That G-string, huge problem.
Damn. Yeah, it'd be a problem for most, honestly. You know?
Can't do it.
Yeah. Could not do it.
Nah, even in a dance belt is not really my cup of tea, you know? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the set and the costuming design.
I mean, I thought they all did an excellent job. It really, like, it was cool seeing, like what Carrie was saying about you're envisioning it, you know, using your imagination during the rehearsal process. But, like, once it all came together, you know, it really feels like you're a part of that world. Mm. I think that it's really great. Everything is great.
Yeah. Awesome. I love
Everything is awesome.
Guys, what an absolute powerhouse of an episode that we have had today. Can we please give it up for our guest today, the cast of Top Dog Underdog? Guys, I just want to thank you so much thank you. Coming on through. I really appreciate it. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. You guys were wonderful. You guys are welcome here whenever you want. Whatever production you may be a part of, let me know. And the doors are always open to every single one of you guys. Talk to me about social media. Before we get into the plugs, of course, we're going to plug the show. But talk to me about social media. Where can the people follow your journey if you have social media?
Instagram, Denzel McCausland. DenzelMCCAUSLAND.
You see it on the screen.
Instagram, Rodrigo Diablo, you know.
There we go.
Easy enough.
Like the PC game? Like Diablo?
Never played Diablo, but okay. Yeah, you know.
Okay,
Diablo.
There you go. Just wanted to. Rodrigo Diablo. I wanted to get the origin story, you know? Like,
thought it sounded cool.
It does, you know? Instagram or any sort of social media, talk to me.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, same thing. Carrie Brianna Hart.
Boom. You see it on the screen.
My Instagram is Therese.Adelina. Theresse.Adelina.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. You see all that good stuff on the screen, ladies and gentlemen. Hit them with a follow and let them know that we sent you. You know what I'm saying? Talk to me about the rest of the run. Where are we running? How long is it running? Talk to me about dates, all that good stuff.
Hey, listen, so we out here, Main Street Playhouse in Miami Lakes, Florida.
Miami Lakes.
6812 Boom. Main 6812. Street 33014. You feel me?
Fridays, yeah. Saturdays, 8 p.m., Sundays, 2 p.m. until October 16th.
There you go.
Tickets are $30. If you're part of the South Florida Theater League, you can get tickets for $20.
And my tidbit is just that we're in the show, so just come out and see us.
Mm-hmm. And we got seniors, $25, and students, also $25.
Oh, there you go.
Oh my, did you guys rehearse this in the car? This is really good. I'm like, wow, that was. I'm impressed. I do have one last question before we wrap up. I always like to end on a kind of like a deep question, a little introspective question. If you guys will entertain me, guys, I do want to ask if there was one thing that you could tell the version of yourself from 10 years ago with the knowledge that you have today.
What the fuck?
What would it be? I can tell themselves ready to answer, you know?
10 years ago.
Go ahead. If you're ready, you're ready.
10 years ago, I would have been 14.
Hell yeah.
And I would tell my 14-year-old self, you are beautiful. Don't give a fuck what other people think of you. Focus on yourself. Listen to your heart, and it's like what Denzel said earlier, take a chance on yourself. Take a bet on yourself. Why the fuck not?
Look at you. Look at you. That's the Instagram mini video. I like that. That's good. Let's see it. Okay. Who's next?
I would say take a vacation.
Really?
Yeah.
You needed it back then?
Need it now
too. Amen. Okay, there we go. There we go. There we go. Guys.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Man.
What was watching Naruto, DBZ?
Man, 10 years ago.
I was watching Bleach.
I was watching Yu.
I was watching Glee.
Nice. Hell yeah. I loved Glee. Man,
10 years ago.
I always want to be slushy.
What would I tell myself? Pay more attention. pay more attention. Stop being so into yourself. Mm-hmm. Interact with people more. Be more open. Yeah. Be more open. Interact with people. Stop being such a jerk. Mm.
And you did. You stopped?
No, he's still a jerk.
Denzel's giving me that look.
Oh, you're done?
I mean, I could tell my, you know, future self more. I mean, my past self more, but I mean, it wouldn't benefit anybody here at this table. I was about to say, you're about
to
tell
your future self? Wouldn't your future self already know what you're about to tell you?
Future self still needs the same lesson, though.
Ooh.
That's
some deep shit.
Hey, yeah, that's some deep shit.
Shout out to the series Dark on Netflix.
There you go. Okay.
Binge watch that.
Hell yeah. All right.
What would I tell a 16-year-old Denzel? Honestly, I would say everything's okay. Around that time, a lot of things were leading toward what you're going to do with the rest of your life. And a lot of things, I feel like 30 is like, 30 feels like 60 for a lot of us. It's like everyone makes 30 feel like it's like you're really old. And once you get to 30, everything's over. But everything is fine. It's okay to not know what you want to do. It's okay to not know where you're at. It's okay to not have all the answers. Mm. Therese said that earlier. It's okay not to know where you're at, because there's a lot of people who are older than you that don't know. And some of those people never figure it out, and they just go based off of what they think they should do or what they've been told what they have to do. And it's just figuring out for yourself what is it that you want. And it's going to be okay. Whatever it is that has you overthinking, whatever it is that has you thinking you're not good enough, you are good enough. You're good enough for whatever, whoever, it doesn't matter. And even now, I'm still trying to figure that stuff out myself. So I would try to get him to think of that, so that way now I wouldn't have to deal with it. but yeah, just that it's okay. Everything is okay.
Everything is okay.
Everything is Ari.
Ladies and gentlemen, what an absolute honor it has been to be able to sit down with every single one of you. Thank you for joining me today. I truly, truly do appreciate it. I can't wait to have every single one of you guys back on, whether, again, it be in different productions or whatever the case. You guys are always welcome here. And you guys at home, please, you know what I'm saying? Hit them with a follow. Please check out the production. You truly do not have to leave South Florida to get world quality work, theater work down here. It's here, it's alive, and honestly, it's one of the best productions that I've seen in the most recent years, as far as that I can remember. The acting is superb, it's stellar. The behind the scenes, the creative team, the crew, everybody, you guys hit it out of the park. I commend you guys for what you've been able to do in a space that I know so well. It almost felt, you know that moment where it's almost like tunnel vision, where like a place that's almost small kind of becomes like a stadium, and it's what you guys did. And being in that front row, it was like a weird combination of both being in a very intimate setting, but yet in such a, it's like you guys were performing for the masses, you know, and that's what it felt like. So I commend you. I congratulate you on all the success that you have and that you will continue to garner. But yes, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, every Thursday at midnight, you know what I'm saying? What do you do? You go on Deezer, you go on Spotify, you go on Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. But more than anything, you go on YouTube. You know what I'm saying? That's why we got 72 damn cameras in here, so you can see everybody's beautiful faces. You know what I'm saying? And with that, every Thursday at midnight, you know what it is.
Holla.
Holla.
Say how you feel, oh, midnight in Miami. Well, you can push it to the limit. It gets real.